Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
And welcome aboard Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking. Hello, Ben Starr with you and Michael McHugh with us today as well. Coming up on today's program, a jam-packed show for you, so sit back and relax. If you're into the swimming season already, you might want some advice on swimwear. We're going to be chatting with Carolyn Etting, our stylist today, and that goes for the boys as well. Apparently, budgie smugglers are out. Stephen Pannell's joining us from the Australian National Wine Show today. We're also going to be chatting with a lady by the name of Anna Hickey from Thinking Caps, who's raising funds for stroke. We've also got some interesting ways to create a day spa at home today for you, and making that healthy choice during the festive season, we thought we'd chat to Peter Rule, who's got some, well, hard rules that you might have to follow. He's a naturopath at the Golden Door. All that and more coming up on today's program, right here on Mind Food Radio.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
It's Mind Food Radio, Ben and Michael with you today. Michael, this is an interesting topic, emerging Australian designs and trends.
That's right, and also the copyright issues in terms of design with furniture.
Yeah.
I've noticed there's been a bit about that in the press lately. So I'd like to welcome to the show Richard Maneo. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Now, you started your company about 16 years ago. It's all about corporate culture and cult design.
That's correct.
Just tell us a little bit about the company before we get into the emerging Australian designers.
I used to work for one of the larger furniture groups and I guess at the time decided that it was probably time to sort of take the learnings and see the things that we did really well and the things that we didn't do so well and really go and have a go and see what we could do. And in those days, you know, before we started, the company that we worked for sold both in residential furniture, office furniture and a lot of loose furniture, as well as workplace, so workstations where people, I guess, work all day. And I guess because the workstations were the big ticket item, we all tended to focus on that because, you know, you sold 100 of those and it'd be a nice size contract. Mm. You needed to sell many chairs for that to work. So we decided to sort of really leave what we had behind and start this company where what we focused on was the loose furniture items, the items that actually, in most cases, organisations and companies use to show their corporate culture, and hence how the name came about with corporate culture. So everyone at the time thought we were quite crazy because obviously, you know, the big ticket items had been left out of our offering.
Yeah.
But I think from our perspective, it really meant that we could keep our focus on things that others didn't focus on. And also what tended to happen in, I guess, prior to us starting the company is that most sort of design furniture companies really struggled with on-time deliveries, good service, and also, you know, being warm and friendly and just sort of remembering where we came from is really one of the things that we still, I think, do today.
Is furniture like art? Does it, you know, can you buy good furniture and bad furniture, and does it appreciate over time, that type of thing?
Oh, look, I think definitely it is like art. I mean, not all furniture is, but I think, you know, we've been fairly fortunate that the collections that we've either started with or added to, you know, we sell some pieces that today, you know, 50 or 60 years old, they've never been out of production.
Mm.
They usually sell for more secondhand than they do new. We're just working on a project now for Brower Waters Inn that Tony Bilson started about 40 years ago, and the chairs that he bought 40 years ago, they still have. And I think, you know, it's quite an interesting concept that someone would keep the chairs for that long, especially in that sort of restaurant work.
And what are your views on copyright issues with regard to furniture?
Look, I'm pretty, I guess from my perspective, most people say that, you know, I'm quite protective because we sell some of the best design classics that are in the furniture world today. But our current laws, in a sense, are not just a problem for, you know, products like ours that we sell, but also for young Australian designers. I mean, from my perspective, you know, buying a copy really takes away from, you know, from buying a young Australian designer that's coming through. So what we tend to sort of see is, you know, obviously, and you look at the growth of the copy market, it's sort of a bit scary, really, that our consumers and design culture here hasn't been embraced. Like, you know, you go to Denmark or Germany, for example. In Germany, if you're a managing director of a company that sells copies, you know, you can go to jail. I can take a photo today and I'm protected. but yet, you know, someone that creates something that lasts 50 or 60 years isn't.
Well, so, Richard, thank you very much for joining us today on the show. Very interesting corporate culture and cult design, furniture and art. Really enjoyable. I never realised there's so many issues around the copyright, though.
There certainly is, and I guess, like everything, I suppose, we keep saying we need more and more ambassadors to keep telling our story as to the other issues.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Richard Mineo there, talking corporate culture and cult design. And for more details, you can go to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
Well, Australia's National Wine Show kicks off next week under the watchful eye of a new chair of judges, Stephen Pannell. And this is Stephen's first year as chair of judges of the show, and he's the owner winemaker of SC Pannell Wines and is renowned for his judging and consulting in the wine industry. He joins us on the line to tell us all about this wonderful thing called Australia's National Wine Show. How are you, Stephen?
I'm well. How are you?
I tell you what, I'll drink to that. I was just in Orange on the weekend. I was telling some people the other day that they've got some lovely wines out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of good wine made being across Australia these days. It's very exciting time.
Now tell us, what's this wonderful show all about? Walk us through it.
Well, it's the national show was sort of designed, I think, by Len Evans and James Halliday in its inception to be the overarching show across the whole of Australia and sort of be the show of shows to sort of combine all of them, and a lot of the criteria to actually get into many of the classes. You have to be a judge to win a bronze, silver or gold in another show.
Mm-hmm.
And some classes are, you have to have won a gold in another show before you can compete in this show. So there's criteria to get here, and it's supposed to be the best of the best, and sort of to choose, hence the great deal of pressure, the best wines that come from Australia.
How did you get into the industry?
My father planted the second ever vineyard in Margaret River,
right.
Mosswood, and I was sort of indoctrinated at a young age. I rebelled in the end of my teens to go and do other things, but then slowly sort of came back to, I think anything, the longer you do it, the better you get at it. So, I've been in it for, God, when did I start? 1986 is when I first started studying.
But there's a real science to it, isn't there? It's not as easy as it looks.
No, look, I mean, there is to judging and winemaking. I mean, with winemaking, it's a fabulous mix of creativity, artistic and science. And my brain sits quite happily between the chaos and the rules of those sorts of things. And there's that lovely mix, you know, between then we've got engineering and then we've got marketing. And then there's a huge sort of plethora of things that you do as a winemaker, which keeps it, you never get to a point in which, oh, well, that's it, I know it all. It's never stagnant, that's for sure.
I mean,
and then we've got fashion as well. That's part of it too.
Well, that's right. And you don't think of those things. I mean, I suppose the success of any wine label is not just the wine, it's how you market it and everything that goes with it.
No, I mean, making it's the easy bit.
Yeah.
Selling it's the difficult bit, and finding a market for them and finding people that love them and finding people that have the same ideals as you do and the direction that you want to do. Making it's very simple. Selling it is the hard bit.
For you, as a judge, what's involved in judging? How do you judge wine?
It's
you must have limited intake.
Oh, look, I mean, we all spit. So we've got, I think it's 1,200 wines. We sort of, in the early days, the bad old days of judging, you'd do about 200 wines a day, but now we're down to about 120.
Right.
And we spend a lot of time tearing them apart because it's very difficult. You don't know what you're getting, and it's very sort of exacting to sort of taste all these wines, put them in perspective, and a gold medal standard is a gold medal standard, and that's what we're trying to apply to all things. And there's negotiation because people have different opinions, and it's diplomatic and it's political and it's qualitative, and it's a very interesting thing. It's sort of, you're knackered by the end of the day, that's for sure.
So how do you give someone feedback if it's not good?
Oh, look, I mean, this is the whole system. Well, the system was designed to do that in the first place.
Yeah.
The system was designed as a way of showing, winemakers, these are the styles that are working. And then there's always been an open exchange between Australian winemakers to sort of say, well, how are you doing that? What are you doing? And a lot of people do it for the betterment of Australian wine and the improvement of the breed. So it's twofold. It's to do with the people and it's to do with the wines.
Well, we've been chatting with Stephen Pannell today under the watchful eye there. He's one of the judges there on Australia's National Wine Show. Thanks for coming on the show today, Stephen.
Pleasure.
I'll drink to that.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
And welcome back to Mind Food Radio. Well, Michael, swimwear is the thing. You're looking great in your Speedos today.
Can I tell you, I have actually started swimming down at the sea every night after work.
That was you we saw last night.
Well, there was a lot of me to see, I've got to tell you. But no, I'm not a Speedo boy. I'm more of a surf short.
Yeah.
But Carolyn, welcome to the show. You're going to be talking to us all today about swimwear trends.
I am. We'll start with the boys just because, you know, you're swimming at the moment.
Before you start, I bet your stripes are in.
Actually, I saw some striped denim, and they had vertical stripes on them. It was one of the latest, the new trends in denim that's just come out. So how about that?
Does that work, stripe on denim?
Oh, I don't know. On a very small number of people, I would say.
I'm still trying to get my head around denim on denim.
But as far as swimwear for guys goes, you know, we've been, you know, especially in New Zealand and Australia, we've been into the long boardies, you know, down to your knee or beyond, sort of. And that sort of silhouette or cut has actually been, you know, lifting over the last few seasons. And the way to wear your boardies now is actually mid-thigh. So they're actually quite high.
They're a long short.
They're kind of like a short.
Oh.
You know, instead of the boardie lock, you know, where you've got the longer short down to your knees, it's just think of, you know, go from your knee to the top of your thigh and then cut it in half, and that's where your short should stop.
Right.
Who knew there was trends in menswear swim design? You know, quite honestly, Ben, do you just buy whatever's in store? And you stick with it for years?
Yeah. But I still wear Speedos, so Carolyn's going to go, what?
You've got to leave the building now.
Hey, I don't understand why everybody's such a prude.
Well, you'll be okay in France. My brother was travelling in the south of France last year, and he turned up to a public pool in his boardies. And they said he wasn't allowed to go in the pool in my boardies. He had to go and wear Speedos. And they said for health reasons, and they sent him off to the shop.
But I reckon in Australia we've become a lot more prudish about it. Like, hey, growing up, we all used to wear Speedos. And then all of a sudden it's now, oh, no, you've got to wear a full-clad short.
But as little boys, you wear them. But then as you kind of grow through, they become shorts. Did you never?
Never.
You've got to talk to your mother.
We should move on to the girls now, I think.
Yeah, move on to girls. They're wearing shorts too.
Let's talk about women's swimwear.
Well, it's one of those things that most of us hate shopping for, but this time around, you know, there were a lot of bikinis out there for a while there, and one pieces have really come back in fashion. You know, there's Marilyn Monroe style, the high waist bikini bottoms. They've been pushing those out in Australian Fashion Week now for about 4 years. And when I first saw them, I thought, oh, God. But now the young ones are actually wearing them, and I never thought they would, but they are. And they actually do help to hold in this tummy.
But are one piece just as popular?
They are, actually. I'm quite shocked. There's so many, because I've always, you know, I grew up, you know, I suppose, in the era where everyone wore bikinis. So the, you know, these one pieces are actually, you know, choice for a lot of girls, and especially also a lot of these new fabrics like the Nancy Gants, they actually hold you in, and they can actually you know, take a whole centimetre off your waist, and so they're very slimming as well and flattering. Again, I'm really big on the whole body shape, you know what your body shape is and choose a swimsuit accordingly. So, you know, if you've got a wobbly tummy and you're feeling a bit funny about that, wear a tankini which covers that bit, or wear a swimsuit that pulls you in. If you've got a really big bust, halter necks are great for holding up your bust. Or if you're going for a more unsupported style, go for an underwire. If you're really straight up and down, like, you know, quite a boyish masculine shape, some of those swimsuits with side panels cut out, they actually give you the illusion of curves. If you've got really big, wide shoulders, you know, don't wear skinny spaghetti straps. Wear a wide strap, because that actually will help break the shoulder up and make your shoulders actually appear smaller. So there's lots of tricks you can use to with your swimsuit. So there's lots of exciting styles to choose from this season.
Well, Carolyn, thanks for putting a style on swimwear today.
And have a good day.
Thank you.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
Well, it's that time in the program where we step across to the markets there at Flemington Markets in Sydney, and Franco Lagudi is on the scene there. He's a man who's definitely always in season, aren't you, Franco?
Hey, I am, Ben, and thanks very much for having me.
Tell me, what's happening this week in the market? So what's happening in your report?
All right, look, there's a few lines that are going to be absolutely excellent buying this week, and you can't pass them up. The first line to start off with would be broccoli. Oh, mate, it's a great vegetable. It's got heaps of health benefits, which has been publicised recently, and it is going at a burner of a price. Actually, you might even find quite a few retailers have broccoli on special. It would be down by at least 35 to 40% in price. And it's going to be a great buy. So buy it this week, broccoli.
Now, what can you do with broccoli? What's one of your favourite recipes with broccoli?
Oh, steam it. You can steam it. You can use it in like a salad, dry. The steamed broccoli is absolutely beautiful. Steak, fantastic. Can't beat it.
Now, Bundaberg capsicums, what's happening on that front?
Right around the corner. They're going to start. If they don't start the next couple of days, I'll definitely be here by Monday. They will keep the market nice and steady. I think the capsicum market will still be good buying. Bundaberg capsicums are going to be on the market, and they're going to be there to buy, and they're going to be priced to sell, and they're going to be great.
Now, I have a hankering for pawpaw.
Great healthy vegetable. Great healthy fruit, I should say, sorry. Pawpaw is fantastic. Absolute great buy. Has been a great buy for the last 10 days, and it will be another great buy for the next 10 days. Get into it. It's exotic, and it's great. It's good for you.
So if we've got $20 this week, what should we really be looking out for if we go shopping?
Okay. I'd say broccoli to start. Great vegetable. Put it on your plate. Pawpaw, great in the morning fruit or as a dessert.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say they're up a little bit in price, but not too much. I'd say still get a mango. Mangoes are great, mate. They're coming into their peak of the season, and they're great eating, and they're still very, very good buying on good price. They were on special a few weeks ago. They're up a little bit, but still too good a price to resist. I'd say celery. Celery's another awesome buy. You might even find your retailers have that on special also. And tomatoes. Tomatoes have been hanging constant. Great in salads. The warmer this weather gets, the better it is for salads, and tomatoes are the leader.
I think I might go out and buy some tomatoes. I'm trying to grow them. I think I'll be there for another 100 years.
Well, that's all right, mate. If you grow them, we'll sell them.
Hey, I'll tell you what, I was out at Orange on the weekend, and there's lots of stuff happening out there. It's great to be out on the land and see what's going on, and I didn't realise Orange is famous for its apples.
Yes, it's got great apples, and you'll even find some cherries coming out of Orange shortly at the start of the season. But Orange is a fantastic area, beautiful area, so close to Sydney. It's one of our real pristine rural areas. A great place, Orange.
Fantastic. And as we head into Christmas, what should we be looking out for now in the fruit bowl of food?
Okay, stone fruit is coming back in price every day. Apricots are on the market floor. They're coming back in price every day. But I tell you what, the one I really love is lychees. I love lychees, and they're going to start. I saw the first lychees a few days ago, but in the next 10 days, 2 weeks, I think lychees will be here, and I just love to get stuck into them.
I mean, and look, you know, Christmas is just around the corner, so, I mean, it's really probably time to start stocking up on a few things, don't you think?
Yeah, I think you can start looking at that in the next few weeks. Obviously, you want to buy as close to Christmas as possible. Fresh is best.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, I agree with you. Keep your eye out. See what's coming in. I think there'll be no shortage of stone fruit around for Christmas time, which is great for all of us.
Now, speaking of fruits and things, how did you go with the limes for the Melbourne Cup? Was there a shortage or not?
Yes, limes were big money. They were $70 a box plus.
Good grief.
They were. They were very big money. There's been a few more limes trickle in as of yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Monday earlier this week, there was limes trickling in, so they're starting to come back in price, just as we were talking. And as we predicted, after the Melbourne Cup, more limes came on, a bit of warm weather. The timing just works perfect.
Yeah, well, thank you for your timing today, Franco. You're perfect, and we know what to do with $20. Franco Lagudi there are talking about, of course, Bundaberg capsicums, pawpaws, broccoli, celery, and tomatoes. Thanks, Franco.
Ben, absolute pleasure as always.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Into the kitchen and the world of food.
That's right. And when you think of Italian food, particularly in Australia, you really do think of our next guest, Stefano Manfredi. Welcome to the show, Stefano.
Hi, guys.
You've just returned from Italy. How often do you go there each year?
I tend to go twice a year. I tend to go in April when the wine fairs are on. That's Vin Italy, Vin Natur and Vini Veri. And I usually go for a couple of weeks. All in all, in about 10 to 12 days, I get to taste about 500 wines.
Wow.
Good grief. Now, this last trip, you've been researching for your next cookbook and travelling to all the different regions. How many regions are there actually in Italy?
There are 20. There are 20 regions, yeah. It's a lot. Thank goodness that Italy isn't as big as Australia. Otherwise, there'd be a hell of a lot of driving to do. Having said that, I ended up doing around about nearly 6,000 kilometres in my Alfa Giulietta.
And are there commonalities with the food, or is it all different?
It is all different, but look, you know, in terms of when you say Italian food, the thing that probably binds it all together is that it's produce-driven.
Yeah.
Now, when I say that, I mean, I know a lot of chefs use that term, but literally it starts with the regional specialties, you know. So there might be a purple artichoke in Venice, which, you know, it's very famous. So there are dishes based around that purple artichoke. So then you go down to, say, Bologna, and there's mortadella, there's culatello, there's prosciutto. So there are things based around those products.
They really cook in the season too. You know, whenever you travel to Italy, it's very much what's growing, isn't it? They don't really cook too much out of the season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Unless you go into the really, really, you know, high-class restaurants, you know, either in international hotels or, you know, the what I would call the more international sort of restaurants.
Do you have a favourite region?
I'm from Lombardia, which is way up north. The capital is Milan. And I guess if someone asked me what, you know, your favourite food is, it would be the food of my childhood, as it would be with anybody, you know. And it's the food that sort of speaks to me and harks back to those early years. But I think recently I've fallen in love with Sicily.
Oh, okay.
And also this last trip with probably the most bucolic region, which is Basilicata. It's the arch of the foot of Italy.
Oh, right. So and what do they specialise in?
Lots of vegetables and lamb and sheep and wild boar. And, you know, what I found there was a lot of restaurants that grow their own food, or they, you know, they have friends around the area who grow food for them. They don't actually get it from a supplier. Mm. They get it from, like, family, friends, and even their own gardens. And that was really, really inspiring.
Tell me, a trip like this, you know, in returning, how influenced are you then with your, you know, your restaurant at the Star, the Balia, in terms of, you know, seeing what, you know, all the different trends and how they use certain produce? You know, do we see that coming through into your menus here in Sydney?
Yes. Look, this year particularly, we've started doing the last half of the year. We've done a different region of Italy each month. So we'll launch it with a dinner, and then we will have a menu that people can choose throughout the month. This month we're just about to launch in November. We're launching Puglia. So Puglia is the heel of the boot.
Hey, Stefano, thank you. I could sit here and listen to you forever talking about Italy and travelling around. I think it sounds absolutely amazing. And also, it sounds like a great concept at the restaurant at the Star there, in terms of each month with a different Italian theme and concept from the region. So well done.
No, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on the show.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
Well, I love this segment. How to create a day spa at home. Did you come up with this line?
Well,
it's a byline.
Yeah, I wish I could. I actually spoke at the A-Spa conference, which is the conference for spas and salons across
Australia. How relaxing must that be? Do you all sit in spas and do this conference?
They're having their feet done as I'm talking about. It was actually really interesting. And, you know, like me, they're all sort of fairly small business owners.
Yeah.
And there was a great range of different speakers. And someone I met there was called Tamara Hart, who we've got on the show today. Hi, Tamara.
Hello.
Now, you're the director of Green Living Cosmetics and a product called Eminence, aren't you?
Correct, yeah.
Now, do you want to tell us a little bit about it? Because I found this product and it was absolutely extraordinary, because it really is organic, isn't it?
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, Eminence Organic Skincare originates from Hungary. It's a product that I suppose is as closely based on food production as you could possibly get, in that the basis of every product is a blend of fruits and vegetables and herbs and spices and flowers. Everything's cold pressed, so it basically ensures that the vitamins and the minerals and the nutrients that were in that fruit and vegetables, you know, on the tree or in the ground, have been maintained through that manufacturing process and then into the jar. So you're kind of feeding your skin from the outside in.
Is it? Do you think you could actually eat it? Because when I came across the product, no, they look so beautiful.
So you can eat it. It just doesn't taste very good.
Ben is looking at me as if I'm absolutely nuts. But the thing is, they looked so beautiful.
I know.
They look like you could eat them.
Yeah. I just thought of you as a trekker on inspiring journeys, and you ran out of food, and the next minute he cracks open
time that using skincare.
Facial moisturizer and goes, have this.
That's right. Yeah,
now, Tamara, tell us how we can create a day spa at home, because obviously as the Christmas season's about to hit and we roll into that, we want to be as super relaxed as we can be.
Trying to explain to somebody, you know, how to create the environment at home is for them to remember the first things that they see or feel when they walk into a spa. And I suppose the three biggest things would be the smell, the light, and the sound. So if you can capture those things at home through, you know, creating a nice environment away from, you know, harsh daylight, you know, in a room that's got some really ambient light. Mm. Beautiful candles is another way of doing it, certainly creating that nice fragrance in the room. And certainly the other thing that stands out to me all the time when I'm in spas is the music. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you like it or not, you know, you are going to be relaxed by the kind of music that's played in spas. So it's always good to get hold of some really nice, relaxing music that you like, be it piano, be it water sounds, something that makes you relax.
So it really is sort of, I guess, enhancing all our senses, isn't it? And I think that's probably where we all kind of forget.
Correct, correct. And that's, I suppose, where, you know, where Eminence comes into it as well, because while we can't create a beautiful light or, you know, we can't do those kind of things, you get the same sort of sensory journey. You get the amazing looking products, you get the beautiful smells and the beautiful feels. So, you know, it's all about, yeah, making sure that all of those senses are in check.
In terms of creating that relaxing environment, what, do you have a recommendation for candles? Because you can either get good or bad smelling candles.
I like the pure soy candles because they burn very clean. You know, you don't have that situation where you've kind of got your wick in the middle and all of this wax on the outside.
Yeah.
They burn really clean.
Yeah.
They're an environmentally friendly candle. I actually deal with...
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's, you know, as I said, I think your product's amazing. And no, don't worry, Ben.
I'm so relaxed. I'm just sitting here. We're not even in the spa. So there you go.
So thanks for being on the show.
You're very welcome.
Well, Christmas is around the corner. I love Christmas. This is a place, Michael, that I've always wanted to go to. You know, for a hypochondriac, Golden Door would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Do you not have the key to the Golden Door?
The Golden Door.
Do you know, I have never been to the Golden Door. I've heard all about it.
I would have thought you would have been there a few times in
Thank
your career.
You, but no.
No?
Now, we've got on the show today the naturopath from Golden Door. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you. It's good to be on the show.
Now, listen, let's just... What does a naturopath actually do?
Well, naturopath looks at the holistic health of a person. So they look at a person's, what they're eating, how they're sleeping, what they're drinking, and also ask intimate questions like, how's your bowel movements, how's your hormones? There's a range of things, how's your work life, all these different things. But ultimately, what it can come down to, there may be vitamin mineral deficiencies due to just poor eating or even, say, just poor healthy lifestyle choices. And so it's really wellness coaching in another sense as well.
Do you find that people coming through, you know, to the Golden Door, they're suffering or, you know, they kind of have similar symptoms and that they're, you know, stressed, burnt out, need time out to kind of refocus and, you know, when they get back on that treadmill?
All of above.
Yeah.
All of above. And a whole range of types of conditions that come along with that too, from poor sleep to digestive problems to burnt out, stressed, anxious, depressed, or just really needing time out just to recharge. So there's a whole range of different things that people can walk in with.
Is this the last resort? Like, for people, do they have to get to that point to suddenly think, I need help?
Yeah, I sort of laugh at your question, the last resort. But it's certainly, I think people get to a crunch point, and it's sort of like, for some people, it's like they can't go to hospital because they haven't got a broken bone, and they can't go to rehab if they've been drinking too much. They're on that cusp.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, a retreat is a place where it's an in-between place where they can learn how to re-educate themselves on wellness, and so they can get some coping skills and ways of how, when they go back to their normal life, how they can change these patterns or behaviours or eating patterns or sleeping patterns and things like that.
Can you walk us through someone that may have come in, you know, really in a bad way and, you know, from what you've done with them, where they are now type thing?
Well, I had a guy who came in yesterday, and this is just a very simple thing. I saw him 2.5 years ago, and in April 2010, and I just had a consult with him. And he walked in yesterday or on Sunday, and he says, "I want to see Peter again. I want to see the naturopath." So I didn't know until he walked in yesterday for the consult. And he said that I gave him two things that were really made a big difference in his life and also his wife's life. And he had chronic bloating and gas and wind, and his wife was very sick of it 2.5 years ago, and he was having a really difficult time with his digestion. So I gave him two simple things, digestive enzymes that helped with his digestion, and he said it was the best thing that's since sliced bread for him, and that's made a big difference in his life, just through his digestion.
Wow.
So it's a very simple thing, but sometimes that may just be one simple thing that makes a difference.
Now tell me, in terms of making healthy choices during the festive season, give us a couple of tips.
Yeah, one of the things that you've got to watch out for is food pushes. When you go to the family gathering, or you catch up with family members, or you have the work parties and things like that, so you've got to sort of have a bit of a party plan before you go, and be prepared to say no, and you don't have to eat everything on the plate also. Mm. So these are sort of simple things, and practice a bit of under-eating and mindful of what you're eating as well. So if you've got all these different foods, you don't have to eat everything.
Yeah. Well, Peter Rule, thanks for putting some rules around the festive season for us. That's a good point.
Oh, God, ooh, get you.
What a pun.
God, what are you smart?
You're the naturopath.
That's smart.
Naturopath at Golden Door. And of course,
good health rules.
Yeah,
good health rules.
We should do an interview after Christmas on how to recover after all this, hey?
Yeah.
Peter, thank you very much. It was fascinating.
You're welcome, Ben. Thanks, Michael.
Visit mindfood.com today. Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
It's Mind Food Radio. Now on to a very important topic about raising funds for stroke. And on the line, we've got Anna Hickey joining us with a program called Thinking Caps. How are you, Anna?
I'm very well, thanks, Ben. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show. Now, it's amazing. Strokes come in many different forms. One of my neighbours the other day was talking about the fact that she said, "Oh, I don't want to tell you, but I've had a stroke in the last week." And I'm like, "Are you serious?" So it affects many, many people, doesn't it? What are the stats on this type of thing?
Yeah. So right now in Australia, there are about 350,000 people living with stroke. And one in six people in their lifetime will have a stroke. So it's certainly something that affects many, many, many of us.
What are some of the things people can do to avoid a stroke?
Some strokes are preventable, others less so.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the causes of stroke include high blood pressure, a family history of stroke, being overweight, smoking, high cholesterol, and high intake of alcohol. So it's all about balancing those sorts of lifestyle factors.
And hopefully that will avoid the serious implications of having a stroke. For people listening in today, what are some of the symptoms that you might experience if you are having a stroke and you happen to be, unfortunately, by yourself at the time?
The best thing that we say is a sign of stroke is fast. So it's face. Has a person's face dropped? Arms. Can you raise your arms? Can someone's arms be raised? Speech. Is there speech slurred? And time, so to call an ambulance immediately. So any of those signs, if you see any of those signs in someone suffering a stroke, it's to call an ambulance straight away.
Mm, it's a great cause, Thinking Caps. So once again, how do we get behind all this wonderful thing that you're doing?
The way that you get behind Thinking Caps is to visit our website, www.strokefoundation.com.au, and you can follow the link to Thinking Caps for Stroke, and we just ask that anyone in the community either don the hat on the day and give the gold coin donation, or if you may have missed the day, it's not too late, you can still donate to this cause. We're happy to accept any donations and enthusiasm.
Fantastic. Now, Anna, you were talking about how many people have, could suffer a stroke or are suffering a stroke. Is that figure increasing given the fact that we're becoming a lot more unhealthy these days?
Fantastic question, and I don't have the answer to that off the top of my head, but one thing that the one important thing to note is that strokes are largely preventable, so that's why giving donations to causes like Thinking Caps are so important, because we rely on funds from the community to make sure that our programs can be executed. So things like the FAST campaign, where we promote the signs of stroke, are only made possible through the generous donations of the community. So certainly, as I said, strokes are largely preventable, And the way that we can decrease these figures is by getting community support.
Well, it's a wonderful thing that you're doing, and thank you for being a stroke of good luck on the program and talking about strokes.
Thanks so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
Not a problem. That's Anna Hickey there. She's looking after the fabulous stroke fundraising thing called Thinking Caps, and you can get behind it. Jump online and get behind a great cause. Thanks again, Anna.
No, thank you. Have a great day.
And that's a wrap. Thank you for joining us today here on Mind Food Radio. Now, the December issue is now out and available in stores. Lots of fabulous, wonderful content in there. But what I love about this month's issue, if you flip it over, you've got the Mind Food Christmas Cookbook in there with lots of fabulous ideas to cook for Christmas or the lead up to your Christmas party. And of course, wherever you are today, if you've missed anything on today's program, you can jump onto mindfood.com, download the podcast that you may have missed or the entire show. It's all sitting there for you. Until next time, take care and don't forget to tell your friends about the new Mind Food app as well. You can jump onto the iStore for that one and download it. Until next week, I'm Ben Starr. Michael McHugh's already hit the road, but we'll be back right here at your favourite station next week. See you later. Bye-bye.
Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick Kayrouse. Bogart Torelli speaking.